Today I am here with Rebecca and Cameron, who are partners as part of the Just Fact program. We're going to be talking a bit more about the work that they do.
So I'm Rebecca. I'm one of the managers at Limbra Hub, and we're based in Poplar in East London. On an estate, we have a community centre and communal garden and a community kitchen. And we work with the community and with things to do with like growing food, cooking food and eating food.
Cameron here. I work at a project called Rurban in Poplar as well. Actually, in many ways, I feel like a bit of a sibling project, perhaps, to Limbra Hub. Sometimes we talk about it as a garden. Like, it's kind of a garden. It's kind of a kitchen. It's kind of a place to bring people together, a place that's a gathering point. But we talk about it as a place where we kind of prototype circular systems. And we work a lot around food, but also we do stuff around materials. And sustainability in the broader sense.
You just mentioned circular hub system.
When doing this kind of thing, I feel like the way that it makes sense to talk through it is almost to do like a mental tour of the site to give a little bit of context in the same way that Rebecca just did. So we're based on a car park on the edge of a big housing estate called the Teviot Estate, and right up against the A12, so big arterial road that runs through Poplar. So we're very much kind of a site that wasn't designed really to accommodate what happens here, but we've transformed this former car parking space into this kind of gathering space where there is the growing, where there is this communal kitchen, where there are these studio spaces, but also these kind of prototype circular systems that you're just referring to, Hasina, are essentially coming a little bit from our background, mostly in architecture. So most of us are trained as architects, thinking about ways in which we can test out at a small scale, a micro scale, ideas that might be replicable across the city, across the neighborhood, across the borough, at a variety of scales. So like one of the things we're looking at is working closely with an organization called Mad Leap, looking at anaerobic digestion. So how we can deal with food waste on a local level and why it's useful to do that on a kind of neighborhood level and how that brings lots of benefits to residents. Our involvement with the Just Fact project is around prototyping and testing out what a circular food system can look like on the Teviot Estate. So that means growing food, composting peelings from our own kitchen, but also from local residents, collecting food waste, cooking together, cooking what we grow, and trying to join up all the dots between these things to say, hey, actually, a lot of this stuff can happen on your doorstep and should happen on your doorstep.
You operate as a lab, which is like someone who's testing out a big idea, and you do that alongside Mad Leap. I'm going to go back to Rebecca to ask you a bit about what it's like operating as a hub in terms of what does that mean? What is it being a hub?
Being a hub is very much about being a community space for people to come to share ideas. We kind of just like getting involved with the community and building those relationships. But I was thinking about this yesterday, and I think inadvertently a lot of the stuff we do is to do with climate anyway. We're kind of processing food waste with wormeries, and we've got a compost system for like green waste in the garden because there's always was like loads of it, and now we've managed to actually turn some into compost, which is amazing. So I think even though we're not explicitly saying, oh look, we're like working on climate change, guys, we kind of like will talk the residents, that they'll see, oh, I see how things like connect up now. It's just making that space for people to know that they can come and there's a friendly face there, and it's a place where they can learn things and get out of their house and blossom into whatever they want to be. So yeah.
And you've got a community kitchen, you've got beds in the garden where a lot of the local community grow food. Mm-hmm. And something you've touched on is like climate consciousness or climate knowledge, climate change and the impact of the way that we eat. For Limbra Hub, that's a really interesting question, because having a kitchen, you also have to think about the bigger questions of what's the consensus around the type of food that you cook, while also being very conscious of cultural food that's really important to the community.
At Limbra, you definitely like a lot of cooking and eating, which is great. When the kitchen was set up, it was set up as a vegetarian kitchen, and there have been like quite a lot of questions along the way from the communities that we work with to say, why would it be vegetarian? Like, we want to cook meat, why can't we? So we've kind of had to question that ourselves and be like, you know, is that something that we're just kind of imposing that's a bit arbitrary or inappropriate maybe for the community and what they want to cook culturally? So I think we've had to relax that a little bit. And instead of being like, everyone should be vegan, let's be more like, you know, as long as people are conscious of how much meat they're eating and like why it's good to reduce your meat consumption and why it's good to eat vegetables that have been grown organically. We definitely didn't want to come in and be really judgy and be like, this is the way it has to be and this is the only way that you can possibly live a climate friendly life. We've had to be very flexible, I think, and really listen to the community that we work with and be mindful of what is culturally appropriate and making sure that people don't feel excluded and they don't feel like, oh, who are these people that have just come in and told us what to do and told us what we should eat.
Because Cameron, you also work with a lot of the local community to put on huge community feasts, which are amazing. I've been to the Bangla feast, I've been to the Somali feast, I've been to your volunteer lunches on a Thursday. Like, I enjoy coming and getting fed. So, and it's great because of who cooks that food. You predominantly work with the Bangladeshi community. There's also a Somali community in Tower Hamlets. Thinking about the objective and the goal of the work that you do, is it really about getting a message across, or is it really about understanding the people and their cultural histories and their traditions and all of those things that make life really comfortable and comforting?
I was just going to say, I think for us, it isn't necessarily about getting a message across. There's not necessarily a message to get across. It's more inviting people to take up space and to have somewhere to gather and somewhere to be, and to do things that they already do and to share knowledge that people already have, and to make space for those who do have specific kinds of knowledge around, you know, often quite niche things like, I don't know, how to grow mushrooms or foraging or how to cook a certain kind of thing or how to make, you know, Bangla pickles, make a space for that to take place, because often actually, it can be very preachy to talk about climate from this kind of you should do this, you should do that perspective. And in fact, I think you find very quickly among a lot of diaspora communities, there's a lot of amazing cooking cultures that are all about, for example, preserving food, which I feel like in, you know, my own upbringing wasn't necessarily such a predominant thing, but actually is so, you know, climate focused, ecological at its heart, because it's about trying to keep stuff when there's a glut of it in the summertime so that you can have it all year round. Maybe more about making space than telling or than sharing some kind of amazing knowledge about climate change.
The conversation around climate change is super white. And I think there's something to be said about that when we're doing the work that we are doing and we're engaging with the local community, because there's this kind of weird hierarchy of people from a certain position talking down or telling other people how they should live their lives. It's like virtue kind of bashing or whatever you want to say. How do you tackle some of that?
Yeah, I think, definitely I'm aware of that idea of not wanting to come. I mean, I'm black, but I feel like I'm working within the Bangladeshi community and I don't want to be like, oh, well, I'm going to show you the way to do it, guys. It's not at all anything like that. And it is appreciating that everyone has their own knowledge and expertise and really ancient traditions and just like honouring all of those things, and not thinking that any one person is like an expert. Everyone has something to bring, everyone has something to share. And I think also it's realising that maybe climate is not going to be the biggest concern for people. For some people, it's like the biggest thing. It's kind of, you can't expect that you're going to go to someone, but the world's burning, and they're going to be like, oh no, that's terrible. They might just be like, well, I don't actually care because I can't pay my bills. So it's kind of balancing all of that and getting people involved in whatever way they want to be involved and not expecting that people are going to become like climate activists or whatever. Just really meeting people where they're at and like working with them and hoping to raise some sort of awareness of climate issues, but also appreciating their daily lives and their struggles and what is important to them, and really honouring all of that.
And I guess you guys both in your projects really tackled that, whether it's very obvious or not, but you're working with people who live in estates, so there's a lack of green space, and you've got these beds that you've created for people to do communal growing. And I know there's some real politics around communal growing. What has community engagement looked like for you? What was your approach when thinking of it as two white guys trying to engage with the local Bangladeshi community on an estate?
I think a very important question, very big question. It would be, I think, important to add at the beginning that Ruben is a long-term project that's had many different authors throughout the years. So yes, Andy and myself are quite heavily involved these days, but there's been lots of different people who've been involved in the past. So it's not always two white guys. But I do acknowledge that as a white guy, to say it from the generic top level first, like, for a long time we've been the problem, part of the problem. But that's not to say that our actions can't be part of a solution as well. I guess for me, it feels like the most important thing to do first of all is to recognize your own privilege and your own position in the world, and to think about the power that holds and the way in which you can use that to make space and to kind of maybe squeeze yourself out or take a step back in order to, I guess the term I use a lot is amplify voices, like thinking about amplifying voices through the channels and the networks that, you know, I'm lucky enough to have as a white person, but also the ways in which people take me seriously as a white person, like you're just mentioning, Asida, in terms of this kind of protest world, but also thinking about public works being an established design practice that's been around for many years, that's maybe taken seriously by people like Poplar Harker, because it's, you know, been working in the area for a while. So how do you leverage all of these things to try and empower residents who, for the most part, are not white people? I guess what happens a lot at Ruben is that people become kind of hosts in the space. So again, thinking about my own role within this, the first thing I did was I spent pretty much the whole first year I was involved door knocking. So go around the estate, knocking on doors, making friends, trying to meet people on their own doorsteps, not expect people to come to us, trying to understand what people wanted and what they needed and what felt useful for them. And then off the back of that, tried to build a program that was responsive to that, but also kind of designed by people who were contributing to it. So, we had a bunch of amazing workshop hosts who were very knowledgeable in different kind of fields that we started off with. But also very quickly, we found amazing residents who became hosts within the space. So, you know, they come a couple of times to a workshop and next thing you know, the third time they come, they're bringing their family and suddenly they're the host and they're like, oh, this is the kitchen, is the whatever. And so making sure that also it goes a step further than that, but also we're able to give people a platform to run their own events. And of course, that comes very much with, the funding that comes with the project. So making sure that people have an opportunity to have kind of run a paid event where they can test out an idea they've had. But also in the longer term, that's led to thinking, that's an important part of the work we're doing, thinking about how that can create routes to employment so that the people who are running the project, people with the faces of the project, are maybe not me and Andy, the white guys, but also are people who live on the estate, really importantly as well. So I'm pleased to say that, 3 years down the line, pretty much, we've got an amazing array of different workshop hosts who run sessions with us regularly. We've got people who work as part of the project, part-time or full-time, who from the area live on the estate and are far more representative of the people who come to our sessions as well, which again is a really broad range of local folks. Stuff is really well attended. And looking forward to kind of stepping back a bit more, I guess.
I definitely have to say your workshops are really great. I always feel like there's something to learn and the feasts are amazing. And I think what's important to mention as well is beyond any kind of funding, which is always really important for projects and charities, is that these spaces are hopefully still accessible, like at Limborough Hub in the garden and in Ruben, like the green spaces and those gardening beds, they're still available to those people living in the estates who don't have green space beyond the funding, right? Or is it something that's kind of a bit of a statement and a question? Is it still available?
Limborough, the garden is accessible to the residents. What we are mindful of as the project goes on is that is like, what happens after we're there? What if we don't get more funding and the project has to end and we can't be there to manage it? So I think that's always kind of in the back of our minds. How can we get people involved and get them really excited about it and start to take that ownership? Like you said, Cameron, start to take that step back and push people forward and be like, look, you can do this yourselves, and yeah, make it kind of like self-sustaining.
How has it been working with the housing association that have given you this space for free, right?
Yeah.
And is it the same for Reuben that's provided by Popular Hardcover?
It's been quite easy. And I think what I found when I was reflecting back on last year, it was like, oh no, actually, that was something that we did really well and didn't have to work at. I think when you enjoy working with people, it just comes naturally. And people realise, oh, there's like people there who will listen to us and like are friendly and warm. And I think that's always been like a very important part of how we work at WEN, to make sure that friendship and joy are at kind of the centre of a lot of what we do. Like genuinely, I love working in the community and it's like so lovely and it's so nice. If you'd be like typing away one day and someone will just like pop in and be like, oh, hi, how are you? Bring you some food or something. So it's kind of just naturally happened and we've just been lucky. People always want to talk and people always want to be listened to. And if you're receptive to those things, then it will be a space where they want to come.
It sounds a bit like the POC version of Friends. Do you know what I mean? Like, knock at the door. Here you go. I got you something, samosas.
It's exactly like that. And I'm loving it. And I think with working with the Housing Association, so we both work with Poplar Harker as our landlord. And there's part of it that's like, having the space for free is what makes the project work. If we had to pay, it just wouldn't work. It would fall apart. There's no way. We're not, as we're set up at the moment, we're not generating any sort of income to like sustain a space if we had to pay for it. So that's another thing that's always on my mind. This is not, this model of how we're working is so removed from like the capitalist way of working, because it's not like we've got some sort of business that is going to be self-sustaining. The way it works is because we're given the space for free from Poplar Harker, which is absolutely amazing, and it allows us to do all this work with the community and then be able to use funding for getting in really great facilitators for workshops and being able to offer them for free to the community so that people don't have to pay, and like breaking down those barriers of deprivation where people don't have excess funds to go and do some sort of like joyful thing or whatever, like allowing people to be able to access these things for free.
And I think with housing associations like Poplar Harker or any local borough or council, where you've got a community from a certain background and there's mass regeneration going on, I feel there's also a massive social responsibility for them to do stuff to make sure that it is joyful, it is enjoyable to live in these places. I want to understand what you guys have learned from working with local community groups, including those people who are providing that space. Is there any kind of remits that you have to meet? Or
I'd say with the way that we work at Limbra with Poplar Harker, I'd say there have definitely been challenges along the way. But at the moment, we've got a really good contact at Poplar Harker. We can go and talk to Chloe, like she's a person, and that's really helped. But there have been things where there might be decisions made about the space which are not necessarily decisions we would make. So the garden that we work in used to be individual plots rented by residents, and we've transitioned to being communal, which is not necessarily what we would have advised. So it has been quite tricky, so we've kind of had to deal with the challenges of that. We are very flexible and we are here to kind of like advocate for the community and just support, you know, in the best way that we can, and we create that bridge sometimes between like the community and the housing association, which is quite useful, I think, really.
I was just going to say, I think maybe I shouldn't say this too loudly because Poplar Harker might hear us, but we've managed to keep our growing spaces individual for the most part. So we've got individual, we've got 13 families with their own allotment plots on site at Reuben, plus a shared space, but don't tell anyone.
We'll just have to keep building more beds.
Building more beds. That's the other one. Building more beds. But I think maybe there's on a, I don't know, like an interesting reflection about this relationship with Poplar Harker is, I think for us is largely positive. Like we feel like they really support the project. They're really keen on the project. The Teviot Estate's about to be redeveloped. Like it's going to change completely. And we feel like, I don't know, I don't know how much of this I can say, you know. It's like I think we feel hopeful about our long-term future in the neighbourhood as well. And I think we get a feeling that the Robin Project will be there, even though where we are based now is going to be a big tower block in a few years' time. But hopefully we'll be, you know, a part of the neighbourhood for some time to come, because I think we feel really invested in that. And of course, as I was saying before, you know, we're here to put people in, I mean, what's the Just Fact tagline? Putting communities in the lead, or is that,
yeah,
it's we're here for that one. Putting people in charge, which obviously then means you know, local residents running stuff. So it doesn't make sense if it's anywhere but on their doorstep.
I feel like this definitely needs a part two to answer some questions which were a bit more to do with food systems and trying to achieve the goal of, you know, reducing CO2 emissions. But I think for now it's been really useful listening to you both talk about the work that you do with your specific projects and the community groups that you work with. Because I'm really conscious of, you know, that particular community group, Tower Hamlets, predominantly Bangladeshi, there's this kind of label of them being deprived. And I'm conscious that the work that we also do on the Just Fact program, part of amplifying their voices or transferring ownership or however we want to term it, it's also to move away from that narrative. And to end, I'd like to know what you both have learned from your time working with the local community in Tower Hamlets. What have you taken away with you? Or what is something that you'd like to continue exploring? Big question.
So much, yeah. It's a difficult one to put in one answer, isn't it? I think the power of like family and community. I think what I feel really amazed about working in Poplar is the ways in which people are, I don't know, live in like multi-generational households quite often, and that's quite an amazing thing. And the way in which people support each other in that scenario and in that environment is really, really joyful. I think also very difficult at times, must have to acknowledge that. However, it's been really joyful, I guess, for me, maybe feeling a little bit a part of a couple of those families and able to, I don't know, being able to know the family pretty well by now. It's not really a lesson, but it's more of a
personal thing. No, but that's really sweet. I think that's very, no, but it is. I think it's really lovely to have that personal rather than, well, I think this is what I learned. What about for you, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think also part of that, just kind of really being welcomed by the community. And like, yeah, it's just it just feels really, like I feel really lucky that I've been welcomed. And like there's the woman who lives like next door to the hub, it's like, she's like, oh, my daughter. She's like, come over anytime for food. Which is just like, so, it's just so lovely. And I think I've realised like, well, I already knew there's so much wealth of knowledge, like growing knowledge. And people will go, oh, no, I'm not much of a gardener. And they'll be like, oh, these are just my like 50 tomatoes that I've grown on my windowsill or whatever. So there's so many gardeners out there that don't think they are, which is always really lovely. And like, yeah, giving people that space to be like, oh no, you're great at this, like, you, yeah, you've got this, please tell me how you did it. And also just that, you know, you just give people space to gather and it just creates magic. We've got like a coffee morning on a Monday, and it's run by Burdett Football Club for women. And a lot of these women would have just like dropped their kids at school, gone home, and then been at home by themselves. And just to have a space where they can come on a Monday, people have made friends, like we have crazy Eid parties, and just everyone chats so loudly and everyone wants to cook and share food. And just seeing people really come out themselves, and that's just literally giving them space to gather. So yeah, it's just like that. It's like so simple, like just give people space and then they will come. And then they will hang out and they will make friends and it will be good for their well-being and they will share food. Like, yeah.
Just to touch back on what you said about the wealth of skills and knowledge within these communities. There's this idea of we need to go in and, you know, that sometimes is this saviour ideal of like, we need to teach them something, when actually you're like, no. It's part of their culture. It's part of their history, their traditions. If agriculture is a large part of what's been going on in their native homes or whatever, and it's so, there's so much wealth and knowledge, and it's about actually we can teach you something. And like you say, giving people the space allows for them to share their skills, their expertise, and be able to say, no, I actually am an expert in something. Even if the world is telling you, no, an expert means this, this, and this. How can we find out what's going on at Rurban? Where can people follow you?
We are open to our growers anytime they want. To the public, we're around on a Thursday and a Friday, but we've got very regular events on Thursdays. We've got stuff in the afternoon, evening, trying to find that sweet spot between dropping off or picking up kids from school, maybe finishing work, maybe having some time where you can bring your kids along, but also trying to catch people who might want to come along before they pick up their kids as well. So Thursday afternoons, and then Thursday, kind of end of morning, lunchtime, we've got regular volunteering group, free lunch for everyone who comes along. And find out about exactly what's happening on our Instagram or on our website. If you Google us, Rurban, r-urban, or r-urban, however you type it, I'm sure it'll come up. Rurban Poplar London on Instagram. Come on down. Everything is always free. Food is always halal. Veggie and vegan friendly. Would love to see you there.
Amazing. And something I do know is you're searching for volunteers. So if you want to be a volunteer for Rurban, hit them up, let them know. It's all about being open to learning new skills. You don't need any previous experience. And like you said, free veggie lunch. How do people get to find out about Limbra?
So the best way to find out about Limbra is through the WEN website. So if you go onto the WEN website and search for Limbra Hub, we're on there. We try to put up events and things through there, or you can follow the WEN Instagram. We are also looking for volunteers, especially if anyone would like to do gardening. Always welcome. Just get in touch. limbra@wen.org.uk.
Amazing. And we've also got the Just Fact website, where we've got pages about both the projects and programme.